Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 10K Saturday. This week, Allison is speaking with penguin lover, former child actor. No, seriously, she was banking when she was 6 years old, Carrie Goetz, who is currently Chief Advancement Officer of United Way Suncoast. If you are looking to chiefly advance your dinner time, you like that? Make sure to check out Blue Apron. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone since its launch in 2012. You can select between 2, 3, or 4 meals a week. It's so flexible. You can skip a week. You can adjust the week, all the things. Check out 10kdollarday.com/blueapron to find out about your code. But for now, let's get back to Carrie Goetz's passion about guiding high school students to find their long-term career path decisions. Where were you 20 years ago, Carrie? Here we go.
And now it's 10K Saturday with Allison and Lulu.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another bonus episode of 10K Dollar Day. This is 10K Saturday. I'm Allison Burns. And if you're looking for our full episodes about imaginary luxury travel, those drop on Wednesdays. But today, it's Saturday. So you're here for an interview episode. And today, I am talking with actress, improv guru, penguin lover, and current Chief Advancement Officer at United Way Suncoast, Carrie Goetz is here. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. This is exciting.
I know. I'm so excited. I've been wanting to get you on here for a while. I was telling you that before we pressed record. And I always like to, when I interview people that I know, start with like our history. So I want you to tell me if you remember this right, the way I remember it. I think how we first met was at the Straz Performing Arts Center. We were like hired to basically like represent the Straz in character and like go around Tampa Bay, basically like providing ambiance during events in the city. Is that right?
That is absolutely right. And if I'm correct, the first time I got to do that with you, we were Tacky Torres and Ricky Criswell was in drag.
That's right. I think every time we did it, Rick Criswell was in drag.
Yep.
But there's a little bit of context here, you guys. The Straz, what used to be Tampa Bay Performing Arts Center, would literally hire us as actors to like go to events and literally just have fun, but be like characters. And there were sometimes we would even just like walk around the city. There was like beer crawls or pub crawls, but they'd be like, just go represent us, have fun.
It was fantastic. And I always appreciated the events. Like, we always were very professional, but I always liked the events that were like, oh, you're done at 9. Please stay. And we'd be like, sure, drinking champagne and eating shrimp and being like, this is lovely. Thank you for having us. We're actors. We don't usually eat.
I know. It was so much fun. We did that for many, many years. And then after that, you know, we've just followed each other on Facebook. We've been friends. We had babies right around the same time.
My son's first girlfriend was your daughter.
That's right. We had a little meetup with them in their chubby roles at like just a few months old. We started a mom Facebook group called the Knocked Up Mommies Club. So if you're a mom out there and you're looking for a little camaraderie, you can always check that out. Yeah, it's been a fun, gosh, what? I mean, 10 years?
Oh, no, it's more than that. It's got to be more than that. I started working at the Straz Center in 2005. And I want to say they started that initiative like 2006 or something like that. So yeah, I'm embarrassed to say that it's been like, let's just say a decade and a half.
Yeah. I mean, Emma's, she's 16, my oldest.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
She's in her junior year this year.
No.
Crazy, right?
Say no to that.
I know. Here you go.
Good for her though. 16 is good. Once she's at a point where, you know, you can hand them the car and tell them to go. I mean, I know that there's fears associated with that.
Yes.
But I've often wondered when the time comes, will my inherent sense of laziness outweigh my fear of being like, get in the car and get it yourself?
Yeah, it will. Okay. So, Carrie, you have had so many jobs, and a lot of those jobs have been very important jobs. I'm always fascinated by your career path, but I also know, you know, you're an accomplished actress. And so I kind of want to start there because I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that's where your roots are. Your roots are in acting and improv. And you're definitely like a chameleon of an actress, where I've seen you play every type of character under the sun to even the current character that you're playing. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to know, going way back, do you remember a specific time in your life when the bug bit you and you were like, yes, I want to do this.
You know, it's interesting because my theatrical bug, my improv bug, this is what I'm supposed to do with my life bug, all hit at the same time. And it all hit when I was 6 years old. And it's kind of crazy. So I don't think that everybody remembers exactly when they had this moment. But for me, it just hit all at once. I was in a school play and I don't even remember, honest to God, I do not remember what the play was about or what I was supposed to be doing. But when I got up, it was a house. We were in a house. And I want to say that maybe I was playing a kid or something. I don't even remember. And like I had parents, but I can't remember. All I remember is the set fell. Literally the set like fell. It was like a backdrop and it just kind of, the backdrop just sort of like crinkled off to the side and sort of sadly fell. And I looked at the two other kids on stage and went, nothing around this house works. Oh. And of course the audience went nuts. Because I had responded to something, I had justified it, I said something that wasn't in the script, and everybody laughed. And my mom still tells that story. Like to this day, like my mom would tell that story much better than I would. That she just was like, what is my daughter? Like truly, like she said, she picked up on it. Like immediately, just the way I responded, she's like, this is, and but I just remember being like that, this is the best. I've been chasing that high at 6 years old. Actually, nothing has ever matched that moment in my life.
Oh man, you peaked at six. That's hard.
I peaked at six with like a set snafu. That's my covering an epic set fail.
Mm-hmm. That's insane. And then, I mean, going forward with that, you did tons of acting and improv, and I didn't know this about you because, you know, I am a very good interviewer and started doing some research on my friend that you founded or helped founded a second city in Hollywood.
Absolutely.
Which is insane.
So I've been really blessed to be an interesting mix of like fearless and lucky, like fearless to ask for what I want and lucky enough to be in the right place to ask for it. So after this set snafu, my parents like tried to figure out how to channel whatever this was, but you know, it's kind of interesting. I think we're very fortunate in this time where we have places like the Patel Conservatory that have acting track, but you know, acting tracks for kids are always sort of in the minority. You put your kids in dance, you put them in piano lessons, but acting lessons for kids is kind of a weird one. I remember we were at Sears one day when I was about 7 or 8. And remember how like, okay, so like kids, if you watch Stranger Things, watch season 3, it was a lot like that. But malls had fashion shows and they were like super cool, right? So we were at Sears and there was a fashion show and I really wanted to do that because I thought, well, that would be really cool. I'd love to do something like that. And my mom thought, well, it's the closest thing I can get to performance because we had tried dance classes and they were a horrifying failure. And so she was like, well, maybe this would kind of feed it. And so she got me into these modeling classes and I would do the mall shows. And then
that's amazing.
It was awesome. And then one of the mall shows was a competition and it was the International Modeling and Talent Competition. And the winner got to go to the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami to compete at the International Modeling and Talent Competition, like, I don't know, US competition. And I won and I got to go to Miami and I put myself in like 6 categories and I won 4.
And best look overall. At you.
So like, yes. So I won like best commercial and all this other stuff. I'm like 8 years old. I'm like really precocious, but I'm like 8 years old. And now this is where old people from our area here in the Tampa Bay region will go, oh my gosh, Dot Burns signed me as, oh my and her gosh. Daughter now to this day is still very active and very supportive of the arts and everything. But she was sort of this icon agent for the entire state of Florida, but she was based in Tampa and she signed me and I got my first Screen Actors Guild. I got my Screen Actors Guild card about a year later doing a SeaWorld commercial. And so I started working professionally when I was 10. I continued to work professionally. Back when Florida was supposed to be Hollywood South, I worked on Nickelodeon shows. I worked on Disney Channel shows and I did all sorts of stuff. And that's why after college, I went out to Los Angeles and it was working at in LA. I was working at the Hollywood Improv. I was routing comedians. That was my day job. I routed comedians. So I was still auditioning and I was still doing all that stuff, but I was routing comedians because I loved comedy. And I wanted to be around comedy. And Second City started moving in next door. Like this U-Haul showed up and people were unloading boxes. And I said, hey, who's going into the theater? Because there was an empty theater. I said, who's going into the theater next door? And they said, oh, Second City's moving down. And I walked over and I just started unloading boxes. And somebody said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm Carrie Getz. I'm helping. And they said, but what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm your first intern. And that's how it happened. And so I became the first intern. I was the first student to be registered for a class. I worked in the office. And after about 6 months, they actually started to pay me. I left the improv. I started working at Second City. And I was basically the registrar and the administrator of the school. And that's what I did.
Unbelievable.
And then I got to, of course, perform. And then I got to direct. And then after I had gone through the whole program, they let me teach. And that's what I loved the most was teaching improv. It was my favorite part.
Oh, I hope that you tell these stories when you're in the corporate world.
Oh,
about the go-getterness.
My team knows about the unloading the box. Because I always say it's an interesting combination of like, always look to be able to help other people. They like that. And mm-hmm. never be afraid to help other people. Because that's how it fits you.
Yeah. And tell me, have you continued to use improv now that you are in this corporate environment, you know, Monday through Friday? Because you have some pretty fancy titles under your belt.
I think I'm supposed to say yes. And oh my God. Yes. And I haven't let go of improv. I have morphed it into a corporate tool. And so I have taught at the University of South Florida College of Business. I have a MBA level course there. And then another one that I teach at Wayne State University in Detroit that I teach there. And I love, not that they're both wonderful, but the Wayne State University class I really love because it has Second City alums in it as well. So it's Second City Hollywood. One of my fellow teachers is Second City Detroit. And so it's just great. It's just great fun. And then I'm actually currently writing a business textbook with them on how to use improv in the business place. So yes, absolutely.
That's amazing. Yeah, Lulu and I actually created like a course for podcasters, the Yes And Method with them, where we'll do like a quick little talk about how you can use improv to, you know, even do interviews or do your live podcasting events. So it's so important. And I feel like a lot of people get scared by that word improv, but they use it way more often than they know, even in life.
Oh, absolutely. The best improver I have ever heard, and this is not being biased, the best untrained improviser I have ever met in my life is, and I've learned this in the 2020 pandemic, is my husband, because he's an attorney and he's a negotiator. He doesn't do litigation. He is strictly a contract attorney. So he's all transactional. And so probably he's probably going to cringe when he hears this because he's like, you're not supposed to listen to those conversations. But it's 2020 and I listen to those conversations and I'll listen to him on a negotiation and be like, he's such a good improviser because he just is instinctively using the tools and tactics of active listening and, you know, I mean, literally to the point of like calling back things and stuff like that. It's all improv tools, but they're so critically important. And so, I mean, I use this word hyperbolically, they're lethal mm-hmm. in a negotiation, you know, it's really that added advantage. And so, yeah, I like to think that it's because he's spent so many years with me that I've just,
man, yeah, you guys get masterclasses daily from each other. So I teased it at the beginning of this episode, but I do want to talk about it briefly because for many months I was obsessed with your Facebook stories. When you were working at the Florida Aquarium, you were like best friends with the penguins.
I was, and I missed them so much. And this is so hard because my heart goes out to the Florida Aquarium because, you know, they've had a critical loss of part of their colony mm-hmm. and they don't know why. And we may never know why. And that happens with animals sometimes. You know, one of the things I learned while working at the Florida Aquarium, and yes, the penguins used to come into my office and it was just
I know.
Great. And they're like waterproof. I always say they're like waterproof cat.
You pet them. That's what I was going to ask. Like, yeah, what's their personality like?
That you pet them and the ones that the Florida Aquarium has are South African penguins, which are part of what, you know, their family is jackass penguins is really what they are. Okay. And it's because they bray. They bray like donkeys. So if you pet them in just the right place, they start to bray like a donkey. And then they kind of do this triple quiver thing that is just the cutest thing in the world. And that means that they're really, really happy. And they do that until they're done with you. And you know that because they just turn around and bite you. And they don't bite you hard. They just bite you. And you're like, and then they kind of like hop off your lap and they go waddle off and they're done with you now for the day. But they've had their time. And so they're kind of like cats, really, really cute waterproof cats. And they all have personalities and they all have things that they like and they all have things that they don't like. And, you know, one of the things that I learned, again, going back at the Florida Aquarium is we are blessed to be the stewards of these incredible creatures. And many of whom have healthier and longer lives because they are in you know, in the care of an aquarium or a zoo. But on the flip side, yeah. you know, nature's cruel and things happen. And sometimes you lose animals and sometimes you just don't even know why. And so, yeah, they recently lost a lot of that colony. It's a lot of like, I called a friend and I was like, oh, please tell me it's not this one, this one, and this one. And she was just quiet. And I just went, oh no. And then I said, and I cried for a little bit. Cause yeah, they're just, the penguins are the best. If you could have a pet penguin and it would be like socially acceptable and like not like some sort of big violation of some sort of.
I love that.
They're wonderful.
Oh, and so now you have a few current jobs. Mm-hmm. One being the chief advancement officer at United Way Suncoast, and the other is you're starring in a play currently at Stageworks Theater. So I want to start with the chief advancement officer. Now that's a very fancy title. So can you tell someone like me who's just a little podcaster, what does that mean? What do you do?
I'm a fundraiser. Bottom line, I'm a fundraiser. So yeah, it's a fundraiser. It's a fundraising position. I have the honor of leading the fundraising arm of United Way Suncoast, which for us is, this is the largest I've ever gotten to work, which I've gotten, I get to work in Hillsborough, which is Tampa, Pinellas, so I get St. Pete, Clearwater, and then Sarasota County, obviously, and then Manatee, so Bradenton's big for us, and then DeSoto County, you know, kind of a small inland, very rural community, which has a really interesting set of challenges that face it, because it is an inland. It doesn't have the tourism that my other counties that I handle have. And so we have a lot of issues facing the community right now, and I'm an idealist, and I want to make the world better. And so, you know, fundraising, I think, comes about, I think all actors know how to hustle. Mm-hmm. All actors know how to make things happen and how to find money and how to, you know, get sponsors for their shows and investors in their ideas, and whether or not you're working. I mean, the term producer is really fundraiser in a lot of ways. And so, you know, an executive producer does one thing, but a lot of producers, their primary job is to just go out and raise money. And so it's not that far of a stretch. I just say, you know, I'm a producer for the social programs that make the Tampa Bay region better. But it's great. I've got a team of, there's 17 of us fundraisers on my team, and they just do incredible work. They go out there every day and tell people why they need to invest in our children and invest in our community and invest in some of the systemic issues that cause, you know, inequity. When we do a lot of work in racial diversity and inclusion, and it's just in social justice, it's just a cool job. I got a cool, cool job. And I work with some amazing, amazing people. So yeah, that's my day job. It does not suck. It is a very, very cool day job.
Oh, that's so cool. And what's also cool is that you're starring in a show right now. Now, by the time this podcast comes out, yeah, I know, she's crazy. By the time this podcast releases, you would have closed the show, but I still want to talk about it. The show is called Sylvia. Give our listeners a little blurb, an elevator pitch about what this show's about.
The show's so nice. We've done it thrice. Yeah. So Sylvia started as a really cute idea. Whoa, almost 10 years ago. Yeah. A little over 10 years ago now. It's a beloved play by A.R. Gurney about Sylvia, the dog played by a person. And originally the role was originated by Sarah Jessica Parker on Broadway. And that was back in 1997. And since then, people love to do Sylvia because if you have the right cast for it, it is absolutely a laugh out loud, laugh till you cry comedy about, and you got to have somebody crazy like me that has sacrificed their body to be a dog on stage the entire show. And so, you know, granted, Sylvia talks and has strong opinions and salty language, but at the core of her, she's an incredibly physical character that jumps on people and things and does all sorts of crazy stuff and really embodies everything that's wonderful about dogs. And so she comes into the life of some empty nesters and sort of becomes this surrogate other woman sort of crisis for a couple who has just gotten their kids out of the house and would like to, you know, she would very much like to go off an adventure and now go on trips at a moment's notice. And I think he still kind of holds on to the safety and security. Well, we can't go. We have to take care of Sylvia. Who takes care of Sylvia? It's been hilarity ensues. So it's been a good ride. We brought it back. We did it in 2013. Then we brought it back again in 2015. Mm-hmm. No, 2012. Then 2015, and now we're bringing it back, and we really brought it back because with the pandemic, with everything that's happened, you know, we really thought, what's one of the funniest shows Stageworks has ever done? Everybody hands down said Sylvia. I said, I will do it one last time. I would be honored to do it. It's such a fun. play. And I said, I'd be absolutely honored to do it one more time. And we'd really, you know, the hope was, is that this would be the big celebration to come back to the theater. And I will be honest, I mean, ticket sales have been great. Our audiences have been fantastic, but who expected the Delta variant?
Right.
And we literally started this run with, if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask, to everybody in the theater's got to wear a mask. And we only do a 3-week run. And it's just amazing to see that's how far it went from opening 3 weeks ago to closing this weekend and being like, that's how much things have changed. So
I know, it's crazy.
It's nuts. It's nuts.
Yeah. So, but coming back to the theater after, you know, so much time off, did you have an emotional reaction like the first time you heard the audience or the first time you set foot back on stage?
It is the longest I have gone since I was 16 or 17 years old. It's the longest I have gone not on a show. Because I also direct. So like if I line up, because like even when I was pregnant and stuff with my son, and even when my son was little, I directed a lot. Because that was easier, right? You know, you got your direction, you got your direction, you do your thing, the show opens, you say, good luck, everybody, and you take off. And so I was doing a lot more directing projects then. But yeah, this was the longest I had gone. And I walked out and I kept coming home from rehearsal going, I don't remember how this stuff works anymore. Like, I just don't remember what, and it was a lot harder. Like third time doing the show. And I had trouble with my lines, like just things. And then I also think, honestly, I had trouble with my lines because the world is chaos. And it's like, you forget how much mental energy it takes to learn lines. And with everything that's going on and how nuts the world is, it's just like, I couldn't get anything to stick. And so, yeah, it was, but going out and hearing the crowd, and yes, it's been challenging, but it has been so worth it. And I miss it so much. And I'm really desperately hoping that the rest of the season can go on and that we can get through this. And that, you know, as long as people are wearing their masks, that maybe we can get through this without theaters closing again. I'm desperately hoping we can get through this.
Me too. Yeah. We're in rehearsals right now for Shout, which is right around the corner from you. And, you know, Shout was running when the pandemic started and had to close abruptly.
Yep.
And now we are about to open in just a couple of days. And everyone's like having these thoughts of, are we going to open? And then it's going to close again.
Right.
So there's a lot of fear with it, you know?
Well, my bigger fear right now, I think what people don't understand and realize, and so I'll say it as a public service announcement, because we are very good about this, and our patrons were lovely. And I just want everybody to realize you're going to perform to a lot more people with Shout. And I think if you're planning on going to live theater, I think there's one rule that you just have to, there's a theater tradition you have to let go of. And that is that really that access to the performer after a show, that stage door experience, you got to let that one go. Like if they can sort of wave from a distance and say, thanks for coming, and kind of do their walk out, you've got to let it go. Because if one person gets exposed, or worse, gets, you know, COVID, the whole show shuts down.
Yep.
You know, the whole show shuts down. Our kind of the productions that we're in, we are not always the blessed. I mean, if we have one swing understudy, we're lucky, you know, and in some cases, see, if one person gets it, that means the entire cast has been exposed, and there's no
exactly.
way. Exactly. There's no way to fix it. And so, yeah, that's the one thing that I keep telling people, like, please go support live theater, but please don't expect anything from the performers at the end of the show. Like, don't hang out. Like, don't hang out and expect, and don't ask them, even if they're your friends, don't ask them to come out and have a drink. Just let them go home.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, it's a different set of rules right now.
Yeah. I completely agree. Talking real quick about the physicality of Sylvia, you mentioned, you know, how physical it is. I saw a picture of you wearing knee pads, and I did see the show. I think it was the second or third time you guys did it. How has that changed as you've changed, for lack of a better word?
So during the pandemic, you know, everybody made their choices. And my choice was, oh, I'm just going to get in the best shape I've ever been in my whole life. Let's see what happens. And I was really glad when we chose to do Sylvia, because I was like, okay, good, because I'm in good shape for this now. And I can actually,
awesome.
You know, I can run 5 miles. I can do this show. But we do two shows on Saturdays, and Saturday night, it's like just me and like bags and bags of peas. I have peas on my shoulders. I have frozen peas on my knees. I have frozen peas on my hips. The knee pads are great. The knee pads, they help with the impact, but there's a jarring effect when you're coming down and you're leaping around and you're doing all that stuff. There's still a shock to the joints, and at 46, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. It takes a lot more. The dog, you know what? The show will have closed at this point, so I don't feel bad. Dog dies at the end, because, you know, dogs always die at the end. And like, the dog is really dead this time. I mean, I'm like, this is the Rainbow Bridge. Everybody say goodbye. She's not coming back, because my body cannot do this again. Like this was it. This was like the most I can do.
Yeah. But I love that you went into it knowing that. It was like, all right, this is the last time.
Yep.
What a great time to come back to theater and retire this character.
The swan song for her is that, yes, this is it. She's going to a big meadow after this, and it's wonderful for her, and I couldn't be happier for her. And I really do hope that, you know, now my next goal is that I really hope that like 20 years from now, I get to direct it.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be awesome.
I would just get such a kick out of directing this show, like down the line, and having some, you know, young thing doing Sylvia and having fun with that role again. And really, you know, well, back in the day, I used to leap off the couch. And yes.
All right. So more about you, enough about Sylvia. I'm going to ask you 5 questions that we ask our listeners, you know, every week when we interview different people from all around the world. So my first question, Carrie, gets is, what is your current obsession?
Ted Lasso. As a person, as a show, as a mindset, as a leadership example, Ted Lasso. I am obsessed with Ted Lasso. Right now it's killing me. And it's out. Today's episode is out because we are recording this on a Friday, which means I have a new episode of Ted Lasso, and I am being very good about not running out and watching it because it's only a half an hour and then it's gone. I love what Jason Sudeikis has done from just a creative standpoint, a comedy standpoint, but also just it's such a positive show, and yeah. The comedy is so sharp and so smart. They throw away lines that other half hour comedies would have hung the entire show on. You know, their jokes are so fast and so brilliant that I watch it as much for the artistry of the actors. Mm-hmm. And they've also taken a very toxic masculinity sort of construct and turned it on its head, you know, a male football club, and, you know, and really turned a lot of these players into sympathetic, empathetic characters. It's just such a glorious celebration. So Ted Lasso is.
Yes. I love as an actress when you can find a show that like, not only you feel like you're learning from, but you enjoy like that. I feel like that's rare sometimes.
Yeah. Every now and again, I'll watch it just to see how I'll watch something over and over again to see how they turn the joke. Cause they turn jokes so flawlessly that I will just, I'll watch it. I'll rewind it and watch it and rewind it and try to figure out what was it? Was it a beat? Is it an intention? What exactly are they doing here to convey so much in that brief little moment? Yeah, it's just Ted Lasso. That's my obsession.
Awesome, love it.
Apple TV.
All right, so what's your current wish list? What are you wishing for right now?
Going out in public without fear.
Right. It's a broad wish.
Isn't it so weird though? Because that is, I mean, like thinking about, I'm really obsessing over travel right now. I just want to travel. Whether for good or for bad, I optimistically did it. And I booked us, my husband, my son, and I, he's 7. I booked us New York City for Christmas. And I didn't think anything of it. I did it like a month ago. And mm-hmm. I'm so excited. And he's never seen this, my favorite place at Christmas and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm like, am I a complete idiot? Should I have not planned to take him to New York for Christmas? So it's like my obsession right now is travel. Like I just want to go to all the places. I want to buy all the plane tickets. I want to go places I've never been to before. I want to go to places that I have been to before. Definitely travel. But I will say, with like the asterisk of loaded with anxiety and not buying tickets. Like if you want to go to New York City right now, it's very reasonable. I got my favorite hotel on Columbus Circle for $165.
Really?
And it's a hotel that I am used to paying like twice, three times that depending.
Yeah.
And I'm there for Christmas and they're like in just like December 19th through the 22nd. So like prime time, like Santa Land, you know, magic in New York. So yeah. So there's my little tip. And then I got really good deals on plane tickets too. Yeah. So I don't know. New York is kind of, I guess, obviously people are scared of it, but I'm not. And I get great deals. You haven't been to New York. Yeah. Go to New York.
And what's great about New York too, is that no offense to Florida, but they take it seriously. They're taking it seriously. And I did actually go to New York a few weeks ago and everyone wears masks, even outside. I was literally walking down streets outside and everyone has a mask on and they're sanitizing and they're only allowing certain people in places. So they really do take it seriously. So I actually feel like where we live 24/7 is actually more dangerous than where we would travel to. So there's just
I will say that I had a conversation with somebody and they're like, I can't believe you're going to New York. And I'm like, why not? And they're like, well, COVID. And I'm like, we live in Florida. I need you to have a moment of just realization. Like fish don't know they're in water. You don't know you're in Florida.
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
All right. So if you had $10,000 to spend, mm-hmm. What would you spend it on? Probably travel, but is there anything else?
Everybody thought about redoing their house, right? Because you sat around your house all through.
And looked at it.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've realized is that, like, I thought about this. It was like $10,000. I'm like, ooh, I would redo. Okay, that covers the appliances. God, kitchens are expensive.
They're so expensive.
I want a new kitchen, but me I need too. You to ask me, like, you have $50,000. Mm-hmm. What would you do? I'm like, $10,000. I would buy new appliances. And that would make me feel like my kid. But it's just like, yeah. Doing a kitchen is nuts. And so I was like, I was trying to think of things, but if I had $10,000, it would be hard not to want to plunk it into the house because we've spent so much time at home. But I will tell you this, I think I'd have to kick in about what, $2,000 of my own money. Maybe I could get like Christmas money altogether. I have always, this is my luxury item. I don't want a Birkin. I want an Hermé Kelly. Kelly's the smaller one. It's this, because I always, I'm a little person and the Birkins are too big. But I love Kelly. Okay. I want a Kelly so bad. And the thing about it is what's really funny, I've always wanted a Kelly. I've wanted a Kelly since I lived in Los Angeles. Like I saw one once, I think we were at Barney's. And I was like, what purse is that? And the woman was so nice because I was poor. She knew. And she like literally let me hold it, which was just dumb of her. And I'm like, God, don't hold this. And at the time, I want to say, I mean, this was 25 years ago. And I want to say Kelly back then was like probably like $6,000 or $8,000. And now
how much are they now?
About 12. They're about 12. So it's like I said, I'd have to crowdsource. But that is what I would do. That is my ultimate luxury item. I always say I would get one. I will never get one because I will never justify that much money for a dang purse. But you know, now all the celebrities with the Birkins, you know, it's such an iconic look. But yeah, I like the Kelly. That's my luxury.
Oh, I like that.
I'll never get it.
$12,000.
How do you know? I mean, and you know what I'm going to keep in it? My kid's snacks and a plastic dinosaur and, you know, a lipstick that accidentally lost its top lip. Like, no, I can't. I'm not allowed to have that. I can't have nice things. No.
I know. That's how I am actually about my couches. I can't have a nice couch until my kid is out of the house.
I may never, because I will always have.
Yeah.
And there it gets hard. Yeah, no, but there is that day when you look over and you realize that your child has just wiped their hands on the couch as if it was a big paper towel they could sit on. And you think to yourself, this is why my couch is from IKEA. And it was, you know, and it's a Flurg and it costs, you know, $500.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. Oh, okay. So if you had $10,000 to give away, is there an organization or a person that you would give an extra $10,000 away to?
And you know what? Absolutely. And I have, I mean, it's like, yes, I work for United Way Suncoast. And so I have to say, but I would designate my gift at United Way Suncoast because we do some really extraordinary work and we work a lot with youth success. And we do a lot of programs that help high schoolers decide what they want to do, kind of career exploration. And there is one particular thing. We load everybody up on a bus and we take high school juniors to colleges. And this might be their first time on college campuses. And we take them all through Florida. You know, we take them to the major universities. We go to all the HBCUs. It's such an extraordinary opportunity. It's so much fun. And I think I would, you know, it tends to be kind of a lean event. And I think I'd take the $10,000 in 1 year. We're just going to go luxe. It's going to be, we're going to get the Mercedes Wagoneer. We're going to do it right. And we're just going to go luxe the whole time. It's going to be great. And I think that's what I would do with my 10th. I was like, what would I do? I'm like, oh, I would do like the VIP bus tour here with that $10,000. Like we would stay in like nicer hotels.
That's awesome.
That's what I would do. Yeah.
How do the juniors get that opportunity? Do you have like a you know, where they submit and you pick certain people or are they part of like a certain group?
We have an outreach program. And so these are relationships that we've been building with our young people. Sometimes they're identified by the schools that we work with. And sometimes they're identified by communities, sometimes churches. It just depends. They come to us from a lot of different backgrounds. I'll be honest, they don't always choose college. 100% choose something. Is a successful program because we have a plan for them when they graduate. The majority go to 2-year or 4-year universities, 2-year with a plan to get to 4-year or a 4-year university. But one of our greatest success stories just did the whole thing, was like, yeah, I really want to serve. And now he's special forces. So, right? So it's just what people don't realize is that there is something very empowering about choice and taking young people who haven't had the opportunity to be on a college campus, or maybe it hasn't been part of their family history to go, maybe they're going to be a first generation to go to college. Having that choice, that's the game changer, is saying, this is what college looks like. What do you think? How does it look to mm-hmm. you? Try it on. Does it fit? You know, and in some cases it's like, yes, this is what I want to do. And this is where I want to be. And others, it's like, I'm not sure. I think I'd like to try 2 years and then see where I go. And others are one young man. He says, no, I'm going to go serve my country. I mean, it's pretty powerful stuff. So
yeah,
we do cool things.
That's awesome. That's so cool. All right, Carrie. And the last question is, what's your happy today?
What's my happy today? I think this is the hardest one. So sorry, during the pandemic, I fell back in love with running. And I know a lot of people are like, I will never love running. And you know what? That's okay. You might never, ever love running, but I do. I really love the almost meditative state of my feet hitting a certain cadence and turning off my brain and letting things go. And my happy is, because it's so dang hot in Florida, I do hate getting up really early in the morning. And every morning when my alarm goes off, I'm like, oh, I'd really rather sleep. But my happy is always watching the sun come up. Man, running and watching the sun come up is just like, you feel real good. Like, you feel good about yourself. You got up, you're sweating, you're doing something nice for your body. And then you get a pretty sunrise out of the deal. And so watching the sun come up, for people who may not know, I'm being in Tampa, I run Bayshore Boulevard. I have to drive to it. I live nowhere near Bayshore Boulevard. And people that don't know, that's where all the rich people in Tampa live. They live in Bayshore. So it's like
the
all
with
like,
the Kellys.
Yes. It's like all beautiful. Yes. They have Kellys. Like I run by houses that have Kellys and Perkins. But yeah, so I run by these big, huge mansions, but it's big, huge mansions on one side. And then the other side, it's a beautiful bay. It's old Tampa Bay. And so you're literally running this very safe sidewalk with this beautiful bay and all the water, and the sun's coming up over the water. It's just stupid. And if that doesn't make you happy, probably need to check yourself.
Right. It's so true. No, I love that for you. It is. That's the hardest part of every day for me, is I'm not a morning person. So it's the waking up. Well, Carrie, thank you so much for finding time in your busy schedule to talk with us here at the podcast. We're going to have all of your information on our blog, Yay! Which everyone can find at $10kdollarday.com/10ksaturday. They can follow you. They can follow all of your career paths, your improv tips, and new shows that maybe you'll be doing in the future.
And if so, I promise I will have it on all of my social media. So follow me over on Instagram, because gets around is a lot of fun.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Say bye to the people.
That was 10K Saturday with Allison and Lulu. And don't forget, with friends like us, who needs amenities?